Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict, and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me singing got them. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. What it cost him, just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked. Not to say I'm a jerk, but I'm an addict. It's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church, but I'ma keep tapping return. I win up, I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges. I yearn for the feeling I earn. All my winnings to turn. You had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm reclining with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict,
Russell Rocky.
Other names. Trade addicts pod. Let's go.
I'm Frank in the chat, and I have a trading problem.
I am Rocky Petrella, and I also have a trading problem.
And I'm dying to start in the questions, and I have such a trading problem that my friends literally call me an addict in our chat.
Yeah, that's there right. There we go. What's up, everybody? Welcome to session 379 of the Trade Addicts podcast, where even though the network went away, the DAP is always here to stay. And I almost forgot the intro, but I got through it. And today we have a long time coming. A fellow joined from the chat, I guess, like myself.
I was going to say, we have Frank in the chat and Dinah's done in the question.
I already have a title. Ari, what's going on, man? Dinah Stud, how you doing?
Everything's amazing. I'm just excited to be here. I'm glad that this worked out timing wise. And yeah, let's get into it.
Before we get into it, what is a guiding principle you have in trading?
So I think that your process should always be the same. So you have to assess where your team is really at. What do you want? What do you need? Those two are not the same things necessarily. And just try to figure out how what you're doing is going to affect your likely outcome. So I personally try to say, if I have, in my assessment, 51% or higher odds of success with this trade, I like those odds. And hopefully that one or more percent will compound over time and give me a whole bunch of excess value on my team that I can use to raise some banners.
I like it. It's a numbers-based approach. I go gut myself, but I think it's a good way of looking at it. And so how does that affect competing versus rebuild? So when you have a competing team, do you move the percentages of success towards more point scoring players? Is that how you kind of look at it?
So, obviously acquiring a bunch of players who, our older producers is not going to help you if you're in rebuild mode. And we just had this in TA2 today. Rocky put out the bat signal asking for trades, and we got some of those, and we were trying to get involved even more than we already did. But one of them, we're a rebuilder, and we were offered a Jonathan Taylor, for instance. And we were just we like it value-wise, but it doesn't make sense for us build-wise. So the first step is definitely figuring out where your team is at, and you have to be brutally honest with yourself. I can't tell you the number of times that I've looked around the league and said, who would make a good trade partner for me? And I say, this person I feel like is lacking a tight end, or I view this person as a rebuilder. And then I go talk to the person and they're saying, well, actually, I think I'm a contender and I think I'm set at tight end. What I really need is running back. And I'm just kind of confused, and you have to approach it differently. So I think the core thing is just assessing where your team is at and going from there.
Yep. I'm weirdly quiet on the TA leagues right now just because I'm pretty happy with where a lot of my teams are at the moment, but it's very not trade addict of me. I recognize that, but I did a bunch of moves kind of right off the bat. So I've been unfortunately pretty quiet, but, and I've just been too busy to rip through the teams, but, I'm going to get back into it hopefully this week once kind of stuff clears up. But know that all makes sense. I forgot to ask you who you are, what you do, and where they can find what you do. Go ahead.
Well, the unique part of me versus the normal guests is I don't do very much except for play Dynasty Fantasy Football. I'm a regular guy. I go to work, try to, take care of my family as much as I can, and play Dynasty Fantasy Football to, fill in the gaps around that. And as I said, I became the real like junkie addict, whatever you want to call it, for trades. Everyone in the league knows if there's going to be a trade, likelihood is it's Ari, you know, pulling the trigger on that one. As I said, like I try to be process oriented, and my natural approach is more mathy. But I do occasionally pull a Russ and just trade for the trade adrenaline and get through it like that.
Yeah. Because he said junkie addicts, I will give one little teaser from Canton. By the way, we're in the post Rocky and Frank meeting in person era now. But there may or may not have been conversations about a small junkies reunion in the fall.
Ooh, so, I love it.
So we'll see how that goes. Let's get into the news. Anthony Richardson, dislocated finger in his throwing hand. X-rays are clean. He'll be back at practice. Anyone scared of Richardson or want Jones with this?
How much do we think that a dislocated pinky matters? I guess that's really my question.
I mean, it's on his throwing hand, correct?
It is.
Yeah, and I would assume that would hurt tipping the ball.
Yeah.
Even if it's just your pinky.
Yep.
So that's what I thought, but pro football doc, Dr. Chow, he was saying that like these dislocated fingers, even on a throwing hand, are frequently no big deal. That was surprising to me. To me, it's like at least a tiebreaker. Like people weren't sure if he could hold off Daniel Jones as it was.
Yep.
Now it seems like there might be something else added to the complication for Richardson. So I'm slightly downgrading him personally, but I wasn't all that high on him to begin with, so I'm not sure how much that means.
Yep. Anthony Richardson was the first guy to take a blindside hit with the person in front of him. That hit was unbelievably brutal. But go ahead, Recky. Sorry.
I was just going to say I'm with I still don't know if we're calling you Dinah Stutter. I'm just going to go Dinah Stud. Because that's how we know you. I'm with Dinah Stud. I don't wish injury on anyone, but I'm really hoping Daniel Jones takes it because I think that's more interesting. Because I don't think Anthony Richardson is very good, and I think the offense will be a total shit show with Anthony Richardson. Not that it's going to be amazing with Daniel Jones, but I've said this multiple times on the pod this year. You know, we had decent production from the wide receivers, from the offense. Not great, but better than Richardson with like Flacco at the helm. Mm-hmm. So I think Daniel Jones can play at the level of 40-year-old Flacco probably. So I want Daniel Jones in there. So again, don't wish the injury on anyone, but Richardson, take your time coming back.
Yep.
Listen, I'm a Giants fan. I know we have a little rivalry here going, Rocky, but you're definitely on the upside of that one at this point. But I'm not exactly filled with optimism for Daniel Jones. I don't think he's great either. I think he is better for the overall passing game and the fantasy production for that offense, certainly. As I said, my tendency is to lean to the mouthy side of things, so you could probably guess that I'm a big Josh Downs guy. So I'm kind of hoping that Daniel Jones is the guy for Josh Downs purposes. He also fits that sort of Wandale Robinson, small guy running underneath.
Just thinking.
Archetype. Yeah. So I'm hoping that that's great for Josh Downs, but who knows? I think it feels like the Colts want Richardson to be the guy from week one going long term. How effective he can be if he is there week one is another question.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And we've probably talked about the Colts too much now. So we'll move on. Speaking of teams, I put this on here because I think we have talked literally negative about the Titans at all. And they could be interesting. So Ty J. Spears is out for the rest of the preseason. High ankle sprain. Dennis, where are you on Pollard and Spears? Because they are just the two guys who are just never talked about. And if one of them's there alone, he's pretty good. So are you trying to get one of them?
That's exactly where I'm at. So I think the common wisdom that I've seen on Twitter or whatever you want to call it these days is that Pollard to the moon early in the season. I saw an interesting contrarian take, though, which was that that means that Ty J is actually the league winner because Pollard will take the early season lumps, and then Ty J is going to take over with fresher legs down the stretch in the playoffs after Pollard inevitably gets hurt again. I'm hoping that's true because I have a contending team that has both of them, and I just need the two of them to not be a committee and like combine for one solid running back each week. But I don't think it typically works that way. I'm expecting once Spears comes back, it becomes more of a 1A, 1B situation.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, he's just out for the preseason, so this doesn't do much for me.
High ankle sprain's a little scary.
That's true. It could be a week or two. It could be a week or two. Because we still got, you know, it's only about a month, less than a month now. So definitely couldn't go into the season. But even still, I just don't want much to do with the Tennessee offense in general. I have people trying to sell me Calvin Ridley, and I know he had a decent year last year, and I'm just not interested. I almost made a Ridley trade just for hashtag for the content today, but it didn't happen. Yeah. I just want to stay away from that offense. And even if one of them's alone, I mean, if I knew it was going to be all year, maybe. But even then, like, I'm not excited about either one, even on their own, even in that offense.
Yeah.
So I think that was my instinct as well. So one of the people in the questions is my TA2 co-manager, who's also my co-manager in another league, and we're competitors in three other leagues. I'm only in six leagues, and he's involved in five of them. So I talk to him about fantasy all the time. My wife jokes like I'm going to be married to him legally soon as opposed to her. I think I was of the mind that Rocky said of just like ignore Tennessee, like until they prove otherwise, they still are just like a bad offensive environment. But I don't think we're giving them credit enough for, let's say Cam Ward is totally average. Mm-hmm. That's a huge improvement. Like Will Levis was absolute butt. So why can't Calvin Ridley be a wide receiver? I've been trying to get shares. It happens I haven't been successful because it seems like other people think that too, but I don't see why it can't happen.
Yeah. I just brought it up because I think Rocky and I have said Pollard and Spears' name like one time all non-point scoring season, so I thought this was a way to kind of get them back on the radar. I agree. If you know, whichever one's lower, get that one. They'll, you know, find, but that's how I would do it. I think I've said that for 2 years now.
The thing with Spears, though, that we talk about sometimes when we talk about him, and again, that might be rarely, but still, people sometimes view him as just a young guy, and he is, but he also came into the league lacking an ACL, or is it two ACLs? I don't even remember what it was, but longevity is not necessarily on his side. We saw what happened to the Todd Gurleys of the world who, like, set the world on fire and then disappeared overnight. Spears kind of had to contribute early for his dynasty trajectory to be anything of note. He hasn't done that yet. This ankle is just another thing that's in his way of doing that. He could fall off before he even hits his like top speed.
Yeah, I agree. Speaking of running back committees, what the hell, San Francisco? Can you guys go anywhere else? They signed Jeff Wilson today after they lost Jordan James, Isaac Garendo, and put Amir Abdullah on IR for the year in the last week. Like, what the hell is going on? Can we not? McCaffrey needs to get traded or something. I don't know.
It's just kind of funny. How funny is it that McCaffrey is the healthy running back?
I know, which is scaring me, by the way. I just put it, Jeff Wilson's going to be a great handcuff to McCaffrey if he's the backup. He's played there forever. And he obviously knows the offense. So that's literally all I put it in there for. But
how old is Jeff Wilson?
I can check.
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing. I think San Francisco needs either like a witch doctor or just to like invest significant amounts of like San Francisco tech money in more modern injury science, because this is literally every year at this point. It's not even limited to running back anymore. Like their wide receiver core is devastated. Like what is going on out there and how can they not keep a team healthy? I still expect it to be CMC followed by Garendo. Garendo had a shoulder. Sometimes they just like pop He'll be back in or a sling under. He'll be back in a couple of weeks, I think. But I'm not really interested in Wilson, both because of age and even when he went to Miami, the health wasn't great. So, I'm not super interested in him personally.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like you said, but both of the other guys, you know, I don't think they're extensive injuries. So,
I'm 30, by the way.
Yeah. And Jeff Wilson does not do anything for me.
He will be 30 this season.
He's probably at best the third string running back, even with these injuries. So one of these guys will be back for the regular season.
He's gonna piss you off something fierce though when he scores a touchdown instead of McCaffrey.
Oh yeah, probably have one like three touchdown game this year. They'll just put him in at the goal line three times.
Okay, I put the Packers in a tier. Jordan Love is to have a procedure on his thumb, but is expected to be back for week one. Packers are hopeful Jaden Reed is going to be ready for week one. That's, I hate that word. And Christian Watson is expected to begin the season on the pup. Golden to the moon, I guess. I just, who cares? They all stink, and Love stinks. And
Frank's disdain for the Packers wide receivers never ceases to fill me with joy.
Dubs is going to be wide receiver one in week one somehow.
I think he might be. I think you're right about that. Honestly, you're right. The talk right now is Golden to the moon. The hype there is kind of wild for me. But the assumption behind Golden to the moon was that QB quality was a given with Love. I don't know that that's a safe assumption anymore. Like, I started out this conversation about Anthony Richardson. Like, do we know that a pinky is important for throwing the football? I am very confident that a thumb is important for throwing the football. Yes. Like, I'm not even sure this is a good offense anymore with the volume of receivers and tight ends there. I don't really want anybody there at this point.
Malik Willis wasn't bad, but he's not going to, like, support three receivers like Love is going to. He'll win games, but okay. Let me see here. Brandon Ayuk on target for week six.
That's actually a positive in my view. What? From what I was expecting.
He's going to be pup at this point. I actually had one more thing on the Packers while I was thinking about this. Would you sell Golden for Judkins right now?
Ooh. That is tough. I've been buying a bunch of Judkins lately, or at least trying to buy. I bought one, and I was trying to buy another earlier today to get content for the show. I've never been a Golden guy. As I said, like, I tend to be more mathy. I think he's a great real-life weapon. He opens up a lot of things in the passing game. It's harder for those deep guys to contribute meaningfully in fantasy. Like, basically the only example we have of that recently is, you know, Tyreek Hill, the occasional JMO explosion game. But it's not consistent enough if you're not getting that volume of targets in the short to intermediate game on a regular basis.
Yeah, I feel the same. I feel exactly the same way. I think I would do Golden for Judkins because I've also never been a Golden guy. So I am not as high on Judkins either as, like, say, Zach was, but I know
I might have spent too much time with Zach this weekend thinking about this trade.
He's still unsigned, right?
Yeah, that was the thing. I was following this whole thing. You, like, obviously following the updates from Drew Davenport and people like that about, like, what's going on? What does it mean? What's the suspension likely to be, et cetera, et cetera. And on one hand, they were like, okay, the case isn't really going anywhere fast. And we've seen with these people, like, spending at least one season while the case is playing out before you even get that NFL suspension is fairly typical. But this case is meaningfully different because, as you said, Rocky, he's unsigned. Like, I even saw a tweet yesterday that was just, like, rounding up news that said someone in the Browns, I think it might have even been the head coach, was saying, like, there's still been no contact with Judkins. Like, unsigned is one thing. Not having contact with your second round pick an entirely different thing. Like, I'm confident that he won't get suspended until 2026, but I can't assume anything. And again, this is me who just said I'm buying Judkins.
Yep.
I don't know what to expect at this point. We're in unprecedented waters for a legal problem before you even sign your contract.
Yeah. The other side of that coin that I've heard from other people is them pushing the trial back will lead to a settlement, which will lead to the Browns signing him, and they'll put him on the exempt list and suspension. Like, it could all happen sooner because they pushed the trial back, and that means they're going to settle. I don't know. I, like, the floor is obviously much lower on Judkins than Golden, but I never liked Golden. So, Brandon Ayuk, anything? We kind of talked about the Niners a lot. Just they're yuck.
I still love him as a rebuilder target. He was another guy who I was working on a deal for earlier today in TA2 just because I have a rebuilder there. But the contender targets are definitely still Kittle and either Pearsall or Juwan if his quote-unquote calf, which is really his contract issue, gets resolved at some point.
Kittle's going to have like 25 targets week one. Rocky, I put this on here. I didn't remember. Did we talk Keenan last week?
I think we mentioned it in passing. We didn't really have a lot to
say. I don't have a lot to. I don't have a lot more to say. He's looked great in practice. He seems healthy. He's going to be good. Dennis, do you like Keenan at all, or do you like?
I happen to like Keenan. Definitely like Keenan in general, but I also like McConkey. I'm curious what's going to happen there with regard to where they play, who's playing more in the slot, who's playing more out wide. My suspicion is Keenan plays more in the slot because McConkey's numbers were good out wide as well. But I'm not sure it matters if the line can't hold up. Like Slater just got the biggest contract in history and then, went down immediately. So I know Harbaugh likes to build through the line. So hopefully they have enough backups in place that they can still be pretty quality. But Herbert has had excuses every year of his career. And I'm a Herbert guy. And still my patience is wearing a little bit thin. Like at some point that offense really has to click to justify the cost that people are putting in a lot of the pieces there. And I'm getting a little scared that year is not this year.
And then speaking of Herbert excuses and reasons for things not to click.
He already said it, but Slater went down again. I feel bad for the dude. He got the money as he deserved. And it's like the second year in a row he's had like a season ending injury.
Yeah.
And to my point, they don't have enough to fix it. They have Alt who's going to play on the left side and then, insert free agent on the right side. It's going to be the same kind of paper mache line they had before. Okay. Camp stuff, preseason takeaways. I just put Stafford back stuff. They've been up and down like every day. It's like he's not going to play. He has a bad disc in his back. He's coming back to practice. Oh, he's not coming back. Just watch
it. I keep getting tweets every day that he's not practicing.
and then McVay said he's going to come back, and then he didn't come back. It's just, I don't know. Like someone said, I can't remember who said it, like this is eerily similar to what McCaffrey was going through last year where he wasn't practicing. They're like, he'll be back for week one. He'll start. He'll do this. And then he got pulled right away. So back is nothing to mess with. I can't see a world where they go to Jimmy G for 18 games. I can't see it. They have to get Cousins. And they'll probably Sneed's not afraid to trade picks, as he's said in the past.
But he's so handsome, Frank.
I know. And he's going to look really handsome on the sideline. But yeah. They can't do it. Devontae's going to leave again. Like if they put him back out there. So
I think that's the funniest part of this whole thing to me. It's like he did as much as he possibly could to get as far away from Jimmy G as he could. And he just wound up back in the same spot.
Yeah, right. To his credit, Jimmy was there first. Keaton Mitchell was healthy in the preseason game. And the reason I put this on here is he's the backup now. And if everyone's worried about Henry, Keaton is not going to be some, league winner unless Henry goes down. But if Henry goes down, he might be a league winner. And that would be ridiculous to just have for Rocky. What would you give for Keaton? A third?
I would definitely give a third.
Yeah.
Would I give him more than a third? Probably not.
I think you might have to give two thirds at this point. I'm not sure you get a second, but I think a third is light if you're a Keaton owner as well.
Yeah, that's probably true, but I probably don't even want to give the second third.
So. Shadur's played well. I just put this on here because it was like the one preseason game I watched because it was on at the party at Canton. It was the only game I actually watched.
Correct me. He played in the second half, though, right?
I think so. I wasn't really watching the time. I just saw
some ton of stock in preseason play anyway. I especially don't put a ton of stock in second half of the game preseason play.
And he's still fourth on the depth chart, by the way.
So I asked this, and you answered it previously about what you're paying attention to from training camp. I guess it's slightly different for preseason. And we have like a spoiler on what Rocky's take on this is, but like at least from the practice reports, like I saw something the other day that made no sense to me. That was like Flacco was leading the first team in 11 on 11, but Pickett was leading the first team in 7-on-7. I don't even understand the difference between the two. So what is happening there?
I think it's going to be Flacco. And to answer your other question of what I watch for in the preseason is stuff like Keaton Mitchell. Him being healthy. that's what I.
Well, do you watch the opposite though? Not necessarily health wise, but performance wise, because the big thing on the opposite side was Caleb Johnson looked awful and slow and making like has a wide open hole, goes the exact opposite way, pitches outside.
Just gonna say that again, we talked about this a month or two ago, maybe. I think it might have been Zach was on, and he had mentioned that it was more about camp talk or coach speak or whatever. And it's way more important to me. And what he said then is and this applies to preseason play, if guys are playing bad in the preseason, especially if they're not against the starters, that means way more to me than anybody who plays well in any portion of the game. Because even if they're playing with the starters, most game plans are vanilla. They're not game planning again, you know, to really worry about the offense specifically. It's a lot of vanilla defenses, a lot of vanilla offenses. So I don't think preseason play tells a lot unless someone is bad.
Yeah. The other thing I had, Torrey Horton looked good. People are saying he could be the other wide receiver on the outside because they'll put Cup or JSN in the slot. That's not unimportant for someone you could, again, probably get for a third. And Rondell Moore's out for the season again. Just the hype train has lost its part again. All right, Dennis, what I missed before, for people who don't know, he said I missed news because I've been all over the place. So what I missed.
So one of them was Caleb Johnson being bad. Another one was Rashad White being hurt. Everyone is very in. I'm wearing my Carmelo Anthony shirt. I'm a big Syracuse guy. So I'm excited for Syracuse legend Sean Tucker to take over the Tampa Bay backfield. The coaches there have constantly been hyping up Sean Tucker, even though he's been third on the depth chart. I think this could be their excuse to actually give him a little bit more run because they don't seem to like Rashad White very much.
My SFB team is a mash unit already. I had White, Ayuk, and Godwin. It's already just completely fallen apart. I don't disagree. Tucker's nothing without an – Bucky will probably just get everything, I would think, but – I don't think Tucker caught passes. I don't think Tucker
did catch some passes in college, not necessarily in the pros so far. Right. He's been used more inside, but he's capable of doing it at least. And hopefully, you know, Tampa Bay has been a good offensive system in recent years. Obviously, Liam Cohn is gone, but we'll see if they can continue that.
Yes. Praise be Bucky Irving, Jason Real. I see your comment. Yeah, the best thing about Sean Tucker was his Twitter in college. If you don't know it, go look it up. It's very funny.
I got three more things. I don't know if you want all of them.
I didn't watch preseason this week, so I get slack.
Travis Etienne, this will come up in the questions a little bit, but I'm a known Travis Etienne apologist. And all the talk was, you know, all the two or three other guys there are eating ETN's lunch and the coaching room hates him and all this stuff. And then he came out and played almost exclusively with the ones in preseason. So there's some talk like that could cut both ways. As Rocky said, I don't know how much we should really pay attention because it could be meaningful. It could be, especially because there's been a lot of trade buzz around ETN. Maybe they want to trade him. I don't know. And they're like showcasing him. But at least for now, that was the most positive sign we've had in the offseason so far for like-minded ETN apologists.
What was the other ones?
The other one was Travis Hunter. It's just the offensive versus defensive snaps. Yeah. Playing a lot on offense, not as much on defense, which is interesting. I think officially he's listed as a first-team wide receiver, second-team defense. So that's interesting. And then the last one was, again, sort of backup running back news. In my head, prior preseason, there was a battle between DJ Giddens and Khalil Herbert for RB2 in Indy. Khalil Herbert was playing with the fours. It's basically Giddens' show at this point, it looks like.
Giddens is so much better. I agree. I agree with basically all of that. It'll be interesting to see if ETN keeps the momentum. Because there has been weird amount of Bigsby hype for how much – they had, and like, you know, there was a weird amount of Bigsby hype. Hunter will play wide receiver and he'll play nickel on like important downs, I think is kind of what he's going to do. they need a shutdown, they'll say go cover Kelsey for one play, and he'll play that. I think that'll be his defensive role this year. Rocky, anything to add?
No. Okay. Other than I was going to say, I know you usually give the guests the option. I feel like with the question guy on, we have to build up to and finish with the questions.
Done.
Oh, wow. That's interesting, because I was going to say, if they asked me, I was going to be like, is there even a question? We got to go with the questions first. But no, I will accept.
I'll let you choose. So that's what you'd rather do.
No. Let's build up towards the question. I like that.
Rocky's hosting already. All right. TA trades. 12-team Superflex PPR tight end premium 1.75 per 10 reception. And 0.05 per return yard in all leagues except TA1, because they'll never break. They always hold. And we have TA1 trades. We have the aforementioned Justin Herbert and Jonathan Taylor for Kyler Murray, Jamison Williams, Calvin Ridley, Jaylen Warren, and 227 seconds.
Did you get all that?
Yep.
That was a crazy deal when I saw it come through. And I think my reaction immediately upon seeing it and my reaction upon closer examination and thought was totally opposite. So I'm interested to hear where you stand on that one, Rocky.
Oh, you're going to make me go first.
I'll go first if you don't know.
No, actually, I feel like you guys might disagree with me, but it feels like a lot of compiling, but I want the side with all the pieces, honestly.
Me too.
Because Kyler is not that, if at all, behind Herbert for me. He's not very far behind for me. And then you get a whole bunch of interesting stuff. Like, Jamison Williams has a lot of upside. And
you have camp hype. Holy cow. He's been.
But even if he's just what he was last year, that's still a nice little piece. Calvin Ridley, I forget if that was pre-show or during the show. I think it was pre-show. I was talking with Dynasty a little bit. Maybe that was during the show. But anyway, everyone's trying to sell me Calvin Ridley. I'm still not sure I'm buying, but there's, again, a lot of upside, like we were saying, if Cam Ward is the real deal. Jaylen Warren is what he is, but then you could also get 2 seconds on top of it. I know Jonathan Taylor's there, and it's just the quarterbacks are so even to me that I'll take all those pieces for Jonathan Taylor. Like, to me, the quarterbacks are virtually even. I know some people have Herbert significantly higher, or at least a little higher. I don't. So I want all the other stuff.
I have no notes.
I think I agree as well. And I think that, again, on first glance, my reaction was totally the opposite, because my initial instinct is always, when it's like a 5 for 2 or whatever this is, you take the 2 and just like consolidate in the big pieces. I think this one is more fair. So as Rocky said, I tend to be a Kyler guy in general, but honestly, that's hurt me in recent years more than it's helped me. So I'm reconsidering a little bit. On the other hand, the vibes with the Chargers haven't been great lately, especially with Slater going down, like we talked about. It seems like it's more a question of, like, what do you really need? Are you going all in for right now, or are you concerned more with the future? Because I think Kyler, production-wise, might even be better. I don't know if that's controversial to say, but he definitely has a lot more haters, both in a real life and in the fantasy space, for his play. Whereas Herbert is viewed as like the great next hope who we always have to make excuses for. As I said, I'm not attacking, because I'm part of the people making excuses for him and trying to get him on my teams. But I think if he has a bad year, his stock is still going to be pretty high. This could be one of the last chances for Kyler to really, really reestablish himself as one of the elite QB options. He's been viewed as that, and then post the injury, less so, but he could get back there. J-Mo, not much of a J-Mo guy, even with Ben Johnson, especially now. Ridley, I like, we said, and with Caleb Johnson possibly being very bad, Jaylen Warren's stock is up. I think I would take the package, but I would try to follow up with some of those trades and get pieces I like a little bit better than those specific players.
By the way, Kyler Herbert and TA scoring is a little funky with quarterbacks, a little compared to kind of what I feel like is standard. But Kyler is a point and a half game ahead of Herbert in 24, and virtually he missed half the season, obviously, or a little over half the season the year before. But virtually even with Herbert in 23 and only a year older. So,
yep. Everything's been said. The best piece is on the Kyler side, and then you get a bunch of stuff for Jonathan Taylor. So I'll do that. All right, TA2. Brian Thomas Jr. in a 27-second for Bijan and a 27-third.
So this was my trade, so I cannot go first.
Frank, you go first, because I still don't know what I think on this one.
I'll take the wide receiver. I'll make that that'll break the tie. And I think the Jaguars are improving.
It's funny. I'm going a different way of breaking the tie, but I'll take the higher pick.
Yeah, right.
Because they're both close.
I was literally about to say that too. The picks on the other. I'll take that. That's fine.
And they're both elite assets, and one has a slightly higher pick, and I think they're super close. And there's reason to take the wide receiver anyway. So, just in general, when you're talking dynasty, if he is as elite as he looked last year, he's going to be elite probably a lot longer, or even just really, really good a lot longer than Bijan most likely is.
Yep. So this was my trade, as I said, we're a rebuilder. The common wisdom is draft for value, trade for need. In a rebuilder's case, it's basically draft and trade for value, and just try to build up that value as much as you can so that you can compete at some point in the future. During the dispersal, we couldn't pass on Bijan because he was by far the best value left at that point, but it's a big injury risk for a running back. Like, running backs have a limited lifespan. If he tears his ACL tomorrow, I very much hope that doesn't happen, throwing salt or whatever it is to avoid that. But I would much rather have the wide receiver who, if the same thing happens to him, at least I've still got, 5 to 10 years of elite production coming back. So the wide receiver thing was big. And originally the trade offer to us was BTJ for Bijan straight up. And that wasn't quite there for it. We had Bijan a little bit higher. So when he threw in upgrading the third to a second, that was basically what got it across the finish line for us.
I have no idea what the Falcons are going to be this year. I have zero clue. I wish I had any idea, but like, they're the one team I can't tell you with any sort of certainty what they're gonna be. They could win 11 games for all I know. It'd be amazing. Or they could be the worst in that division.
I mean, Penix is a giant question mark. So
yeah, that offense is going to move on him. So I
true, but I guess the question is, how much does that impact Bijan as the running back? That certainly impacts the wide receivers. Running is going to be part of what they want to do, whether Penix is good or bad. If he's bad, then presumably the volume goes up, even if the quality goes down because there's a lot more people in the box. Yes. But it feels like Bijan is the one guy who's going to get his, whether Penix is good or not.
The answer to that is, in my head, if they can't get down the field, he can't score touchdowns. And that's what separates running backs. So,
basically a Saquon on the Giants situation.
Yeah, exactly. All right, TA3, Ramondre for a 26-third. Nice and easy.
I take Ramondre here easy. If you pay attention from the camp stuff recently, Travion was getting all this quote unquote high praise. And people were like, oh, he's the fastest person I've ever coached. But if you listen more carefully, one of the players that they compared him to was Shane Vereen, who was nothing for fantasy. I think from a fantasy perspective, Ramondre's ceiling is cut, but he's still clearly the 1A to me. And to me, if I'm paying for a 1A, I'm giving a third for that every single time. I might even pay a 2 if I was really pressed to and I was really in trouble at running back for Ramondre at this point.
Yep.
Yeah, I think a third for Ramondre is pretty easy. I mean, I kind of get it if somebody just wants to get out on Ramondre. But I think at least for this year, he's still going to be a significant part. I mean, how good that offense will be, we'll see. But it's a third. So I'll throw the third there to, maybe get RB2 production possibly.
For what it's worth, the vibes on the offense in general have not been particularly positive from what I've seen. So who knows?
Yeah, I think, whatever. Patriots are going to be, kind of an enigma, is the same as the Falcons, but on a much lower tier. Okay, TA4, Pacheco for 2 seconds, basically, 26 and 27. This is easy.
Give me the seconds. I might even consider it for 1 second, honestly. There are just so many people back there. Pacheco had like very little draft capital, and maybe I should forget that at this point because he's deeper into his career, but it's hard to decouple that. The Chiefs drafted someone higher than they drafted Pacheco originally in this draft. They brought in Eli Mitchell. They're just, they still have Hunt even around. So I just don't know how that backfield is going to play out. I want pieces from the backfield, but not at that price. Give me some of the lower priced options and I'll roll the dice on that.
Yeah. I again agree with Dynasted. I think I would pay 1 second, but I don't think he's worth 2 seconds. It's too much of a question mark for me.
What I'm taking from this conversation, Rocky, is that we are going to be terrible trade partners in THU because we think alike on pretty much everything.
I know. Yeah. It's not good, except maybe Calvin Ridley.
Yeah. I think there's a world where Rashard Smith can have a role and Pacheco is totally fine. Like, I think if you told me Pacheco is basically the goal line guy, I'm not scared of Hunt anymore. He's fine.
It's funny you say that because that's what I think. He could be fine. Yeah. I don't think he's going to be good or worthwhile.
I would take him for 2 seconds.
Like exceptional. Like anyone I'm dying to have him. Like, if I'm going to spend especially 2 seconds, I'd rather do it on like someone I feel more confident in their production, like maybe a James Conner or something like that. I don't know that you need to pay 2 seconds for James Conner, but even I feel better about sending 2 seconds for James Conner than I would Isaiah Pacheco.
Yep. And I would say also, I saw an interesting tweet, which is a way of thinking about it. It didn't occur to me before, which was that like people were talking about like, oh, Breshard Smith could be like Jamal Charles for KC, something like that. And they're like, what if he's Tyreek Hill? Because they've been lining him up outside a lot. Andy Reid is certainly a creative enough offensive mind to put him in those situations. It's just a matter of whether he has the talent to do that. But he definitely has experience at wide receiver. It's not out of the question. I just hadn't necessarily thought about it in my head like that before.
Yeah, he's going to be Jerick McKinnon in my mind, and a much better version of it. So
yeah, Jerick McKinnon, that was the one, not Jamal Charles. Yeah. I was like,
yeah, Charles, not right. I was going to say he's way too small to be Jamal Charles, and wasn't nearly the player. And I'm an SMU alum, by the way. I love Breshard Smith, but he's not going to be something that is going to like break the league. Okay, last one. I thought this was the best trade on the list. TA6, Chris Olave for Benson and Calvin Ridley.
The aforementioned Calvin Ridley.
Anything I'm guessing you don't want the Ridley side, Rocket.
I don't know. He hates Olave a lot.
Exactly. If people are listening, I'm not a big Olave guy either. So I'm curious your take first. And then
We're, again, the exact opposite here. I've been an Olave guy for a long time. Ridley has burned me in the past, but I'm back in on him. Like my first ever dynasty startup, I bought Ridley at auction when he was like a top five wide receiver. And that was the year where he like missed a few games for some psychological health issues and then got suspended in the off season and never came back. So it was just like a huge drop from top five wide receiver to absolutely nothing overnight. But again, I seem to be back at this point. But at this point, give me the package here. I have a ton of Olave, but his value is tied to potential based on excellent underlying stats, which because I'm a math guy, that appeals to me. But if those underlying metrics don't translate to real world production again, you might win this year with Ridley and you might win long term with Benson once Connor finally kicks the bucket.
Yep.
Yeah, I went back and forth on this, but I think I agree with you again. Just because I do kind of like Benson still. I know I just touted James Conner, but I still think he's like one Conner injury away from having a pretty decent season. And Calvin Ridley, there's a lot of upside there. Chris Olave, we don't know what his quarterback situation is going to be for a while. Even if they have the number one pick next year, that number one pick could be horrible. Not horrible, but could be have a rough rookie year or something like that. So we could be looking at 2 years of rough quarterback minimum for Chris Olave. And he's only 25. So, if you get through those 2 years, maybe he comes out on the other end looking good. But even to me, high end Chris Olave is a wide receiver too. So I'll just take, like you said, I'll take the potential of if Ward is good, decent Ridley points, or even if he's average, like you said, that's an upgrade on the Levis. So you get at least something out of Ridley now. And Trey Benson could be nothing, but I feel like Chris Olave is going to be a bit of a disaster for the next couple of years while they're waiting for good quarterback to arrive in New Orleans.
Yep.
I kind of hate both sides, but I'll take the thing that doesn't have.
I kind of felt a little bit like that too. Just because
I'll take the guy that doesn't have a bunch of concussions. So that's Benson and Ridley.
Didn't Davante Adams have that early in his career? That's what the Olave hive is depending on, I think.
Did he have that?
He did. I don't know if he had that many, but I know he had a real bit. Like he had one that everyone saw on TV, and he got his
Olave had like has had like five already. I mean, a lot if we go back to college in like 3 years. So, I don't know. I don't like Benson either. Like there's something that is a mental block on Benson for me, where like Connor's good. Like, are we really just going to throw him off to the side? Like, he's got a year left. And
I think he's got 2 years left on his contract. Like they just re-upped him for like a surprisingly large amount of money.
There was a lot of weird extensions. So not all of them, I don't remember all of them, but yeah, I think it'll be interesting where I just don't see where Benson fits. And like Ridley's going to be fine, I think. So I'll take the package side.
And I'm a Connor guy, by the way. I just think he's 30. Injury could happen. He could fall off a cliff at this point. We don't know.
He lives in Arizona. He could literally fall off a cliff. all right, let's go to the listener questions. First one is, I'm assuming you're co-manager.
That is my co-manager, yeah.
You want to help me with the name?
Yeah, Yahiel Copps.
Yahiel Copps, perfect. I'd be interested to hear his Kyren Williams versus Travis Etienne take. I am okay, so because I love one and hate the other.
Yeah, so does everyone with a brain at this point. But I, of course, did the opposite move. This wasn't even my worst trade, by the way. If you want to hear that one, we can go to that. But basically, I traded for Kyren and a couple other people down the stretch 1 year. Won the championship with him and then was like, okay, now that I won the championship, that's in the bag. I do want to recoup a little bit of that value. I was afraid, you know, fifth rounder could be replaced at any point. Wasn't even that good from an efficiency standpoint. It was just in a great system, scoring a lot of touchdowns. I was worried about some TD variants. So I was trying to trade him off. I couldn't find many takers. His market was terrible that offseason, if you remember. And then I talked to my co-manager, who was my competitor in that league, and he had Etienne, who he was trying to move off of. And so we just did a one-to-one challenge trade swap. Obviously, that was disastrous for me. I thought I crushed it at the time. Until the second the Kyren extension was finalized this offseason, I was still like a quorum guy being like, Kyren, again, is not so good from an efficiency standpoint. He's fumbling a little bit. Like, at this point, I've just kind of accepted that McVay views things differently, and Kyren's going to be a bell cow till his legs fall off.
Yeah, the Kyren extension puts a big wrench in that, in my love for Etienne over Kyren. But something about the Rams continuing to draft running backs has to tell you something, right? Like, they're not just drafting them to, like, put the uniforms on and sit there. Like, they're going back over and over the last, I think, three seasons and drafting running backs. So either they're completely terrified of Kyren getting hurt because they know something we don't, or they don't trust him, but they just gave him like $20 million guaranteed. So I don't know what, like, it's the weirdest.
Or maybe they didn't have a solid backup and they drafted Corum, and then they didn't like Corum and they drafted Hunter.
Yeah, which could be the case. And Corum's just going to disappear into oblivion, but that would be weird.
I say this too, because I think it's like a no-brainer for me that I'm taking Kyren Williams over Travis Etienne every day. And twice on Sunday. So I just
so right now the market is very clearly in your camp, Rocky, to be clear.
And I know that
in that trade right now, I'm easily taking the Kyren side. Last offseason, they were almost next to each other in some like industry rankings that I was checking at the time. And I'm just like, I dislike and just don't trust Kyren enough that I'm going to pull the trigger on that. I feel like Etienne with the big playability, at least early in the season, is a guy who I want to put my stamp with.
And it's so funny. I'm the exact, I've never been an Etienne guy. I don't like the Jaguars in general. I don't like Lawrence.
That's going to have to get fixed after this season. Hopefully.
Yeah, I can see that. We'll see. And I'll change my tune if he performs in the new offense with and all that with Hunter with BTJ, and you damn sure I'll be ripping him if he doesn't. But I didn't even like ETN that much coming out of college the way some people did. So
yeah,
I had him, I think, like, I forget the other guy, but I remember there were some people had him as RB1. I think I had him RB3 or something in that class. And Kyren, he's produced. All he's done is produce. McVay likes to go generally with a workhorse back, and he seems to love Kyren. So I just, to me, these two aren't even close to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Before we continue on, Ari did remind me how bad of a host I am. So I did forget the interview, and my defense on that is, it does, one, I'm just a bad host, and two, it doesn't feel like it's your first show because you're always like in the.
We also haven't done it in a long, long
time. I know.
Had a new guest in a long time.
I know, and we're gonna have another new guest next week, so I'm gonna have to get my shit together. But we'll do the interview at the end, I promise. Sure. So, moving on to Andrew Hall at Andrew Hall FF, who did throw like the greatest trunk beers in the history of trunk beers in Canton on Saturday. Talk about what he likes about TA Leagues being a watcher more than a content creator and what he wants to see more of from content creators in general.
Ooh. So I guess what I love most about the TA Leagues is the activity. In a lot of my pre-existing leagues, it was people joining for the first time, kind of like me. And I got hooked from day one. But other people joined and maybe saw that it wasn't so much their cup of tea. They didn't want to be so active on a regular basis. So like there are certain leagues, if I'm like in my head, like, oh, I'm going to go find a place to trade for Calvin Ridley, let's say. And I'll go like, look, whatever team he's on in a given league. If I see the guy is on a team who I know is the manager is impossible or just completely inactive, like I'm not even going to bother. Like that doesn't exist in TA leagues. From my limited experience so far. Again, I only joined this offseason, but even already, just like you get a response to every trade pretty quick. The Discord is pretty active. It feels like a more, you know, exclusive community as opposed to Twitter, which is just sort of a free-for-all. And, you know, it doesn't hurt that it's supporting charity. But I think the cherry on top is getting all my trades and questions answered on the TA podcast. So.
Yeah, there we go. What do you want to hear more from content creators? Is there anything that you think is missing in the space?
I just want, and there is talk about this sort of at the end of the season every year, but accountability and just like realness. And like, I hate to even bring this up because like the fact that this even needs to exist in society these days is a shame, but like fantasy receipts, I do kind of pay attention to what gets posted there. Like, especially if they call out things from accounts that I tend to listen to, I want to like go back and look at those accounts and see how those people reacted. Did they like delete the tweet, or some of them just like will come out and own it? Like one of the things I like the most, different people listen to different like injury experts that are out there, for instance. Right. The one I like the most is Pro Football Doc, Dr. Chow, because he'll be like, this is my take. I could be wrong because I'm not in the inside, but if he's wrong, he's like, here's my initial take. I'm retweeting it. I was wrong. And that's like amazing to see. I wish everyone did that. I think it would be a much better space for everyone. Nice. if they did.
Yeah.
I will say another guy I thought of when you mentioned that JJ Zacharyson likes to go back and look at his takes and what he got right. He'll do a whole podcast on what he got right and what he got wrong. Like, I think he does like two separate podcasts sometime early in the off season.
Yeah.
And also, of course, here on Trade Ask, we will never let Frank forget that he predicted Will Levis would be a top 12 quarterback.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, no, I'm always accountable for my mistakes. And tell you not to be afraid to make mistakes. So I almost have to be accountable because I can't
do
both. So, no, it's a good point. And I think it's becoming more of a thing kind of on the upper echelon, like CBS fantasy footballers. They all kind of do the look back shows towards the end. But yeah, no, I agree. I think there's accountability of people just throwing things around, and man, I'll say a bunch of crap into a microphone and not remember what I said better than anybody. But I, you know, the main stuff I try and be accountable for, and I don't also pretend to be an expert. So, all right. Some guy named Dynasty Outhouse left a question. He said, I just realized I have a whole lot of Caleb Williams share. Should I be excited or worried about this? And his answer to my question of when is the last day of summer for you? He said, when you are an adult, do seasons even matter? Probably not. So we'll get to the second part, but Dynastud, what are you thinking about Caleb?
I think in the excited versus worried scale for Caleb, I think the correct answer is both. Like, yeah. Why not both?
Yep.
There's clearly a lot of upside. They have pieces who are super athletic, lots of DC, and the biggest change is probably at coach. Where they finally have someone who's widely acknowledged to be a great offensive mind.
Yeah.
The question is, to me, anything can be a value, but it's expectations versus reality. So right now it feels like a lot of that upside is baked in. I'm not sure the downside and the uncertainty is appropriately baked in. Caleb, he was the number one pick. He was viewed as generational, whatever that word means, even though we overuse it. There were a lot of negative markers in his underlying profile 100%. That make me wonder if Ben Johnson can make him good. Like, it's almost a Trevor Lawrence situation. Rocky brought him up before. Like, I could see his career following a Trevor Lawrence trajectory, and that wouldn't surprise me at all. And I think that in general, the Chicago pieces are being priced as if he is still locked in 100% generational.
I love that answer there about both. But yeah, if I had to pick one, I'd lean towards excited. Just, and I have concerns about Caleb Williams myself, but just because they've done literally everything in their power to try and make him good,
except like,
the coach. They added two wide receivers, two highly drafted wide receivers just in the last 2 years, highly drafted tight end, brought in DJ Moore a couple of years ago. So, I mean, they've done everything they could to try and make this guy good. And if it doesn't work, he's just bad. So, but it's not going to be for lack of trying. So I lean toward it on a scale of 1 to 100. I think it's like 60-40 excited, worried.
Yeah, exactly. as a biased Bears fan, I'm actually kind of in the 60-40, but I'll probably say 70-30. And something very stupid of me to latch onto and like was the Bears had some fourth down stop, and Ben Johnson's like Dan Campbell's guttural screaming on the sideline, like flexing and cheering. Like, the Bears haven't had that in a long time. And like Eberflus wasn't that, and Nagy wasn't, like, none of them. Johnson seems to be bringing kind of a different energy, and you know, whether that translates to fantasy, like, you know, everyone can laugh at me for this, but like, it just looks different, and I think they're gonna do it the right way. And you know, I've said that for like the last 5 years, so you can take that with what you want. So his answer to
The other thing is the offensive line. And they got a lot of press in the offseason for upgrading the offensive line, which was a disaster the past few years. But then I've heard some other reports that were also saying, well, Yeah, they did it, but they filled it with sort of second tier guys. No one like really elite who's going to like really bring up the unit. But honestly, like my feeling is if you're so bad, even bringing things up to an average level, this sort of goes back to our Titans conversation. Like that's a big improvement. 100%. So hopefully that'll work out for the Bears and their fantasy pieces.
Yeah, I didn't watch the Bears game. I watched a bunch of highlights. My two takeaways were Burden looked good in kind of the slot role. And for anyone who wants to see Tyson Bagent and all these other guys start over Caleb on the Bears, just watch that preseason game and you'll see why they don't. Russ said, do seasons matter? My question was, when's the last day of summer? I think I swear to you, I asked this probably this time last year. But I think it's different for a lot of people. And my answer is the same as Jonathan Smith's, which is the last day of summer for me is Labor Day. As someone who kind of works in the finance world, that is like the fall, that's when the fall starts for me. And like football starts that weekend too, like for college, and NFL is the next week. Like fall starts Labor Day weekend to me.
To answer Russ's question, as adult seasons do matter for the same reason that two other people answered your question this way. Yes, because kids go back to school.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm the tone on this one. The last day of summer is when kids go back to school. 100%. Like, as I said, I'm usually overseas. I'm back in Chicago right now visiting family. But I got my wife and two kids with me, and I cannot wait for them to go back to school.
Yeah, that was Tone's answer, was the last day of school. And then Vince, being a sarcastic little Aussie that he is, says the last day of summer is February 28th because he lives in Australia.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thanks, Vince. Appreciate it, bud. All right, interview. Better late than never. How long have you been playing fantasy?
So I've been playing, I don't know the exact number of years. It's definitely over 20 years. I started playing with friends in high school. I looked back earlier today and was trying to figure out when exactly it started. I couldn't pinpoint the exact year, but it seems like it was sometime between 2000, 2002, around there. And, you know, I've been playing a lot of fantasy ever since. Dynasty is a more recent thing, but yeah.
How long for Dynasty then?
So this is going to be my fifth Dynasty season. As I said, I got kind of hooked from day one just because I liked the trading element, the element of, you know, it never being the off season. There's always something to do.
Yes.
And because of that, I added about a league a year. So we're actually in the middle right now. Not the middle. We're towards the very end of a startup auction for my sixth league. And I'm looking forward to that startup being over, honestly, because I can get back to actual life.
Yes.
And I'm not sure how many more leagues I can handle at this point while still like being semi-responsible with my real world responsibilities. So like, I'm totally in awe of all the like portfolio players out there, the people like Rocky, who not only are dealing with like tens of teams, but also creating content at the same time. Like, that's wild to me. I barely have even time just for the leagues themselves.
By the way, I was thinking of waiting, but I'll just ask now, if you don't mind saying, how old are you? Because when you said 20 plus years, that surprised me. You don't look
have terrible genes and do not grow facial hair, so I look very,
neither
very
do I. This is like as much as I can grow. But
so I am 38 years old, 38 and a half, actually, as of a few days ago. So, yeah.
You look good for 38 and a half, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
What are the rest of the questions? I'm forgetting the interview. I'm choking. Worst
trades.
Yes. What are some of the best trades you've made?
Okay, so I'm interpreting this. I talked a little bit earlier about just like general process. So I'm interpreting this more just based on outcome. The trade, I sort of alluded to it earlier, that basically won me my first Dynasty Championship in 2023. Right before the playoffs, the trade deadline, I had a really good team, but I wanted a boost heading into the playoffs. I basically sold all my remaining picks for the following 3 years, so up to 2026. That was a 25-2 and a 2-3-4 in 2026. That's all I had left at that point, along with Hollywood Brown. And I got Derrick Henry, Kyron Williams, and Josh Dobbs. So Derrick Henry and Kyron were beasts down the stretch, and they won me the championship. Hollywood hasn't been the same since then because of injuries. At the time, it was close just because of the market for the running backs. So Henry was viewed then as basically what he is viewed as now, which is nearing the age cliff. And so there were only a limited number of teams who were willing to take him. Kyren similarly was viewed as sort of like a fifth rounder who had a good year, but was likely to be replaced. I think the person was just happy to get something of value for those pieces. I won the championship, flags fly forever, super happy about that. But I found out myself how bad their markets were that offseason when I tried to unload them, had that disastrous Kyren for ETN trade. I made a similarly disastrous trade to get rid of Henry. And that's why my team has kind of been crap ever since then.
And then what are some of the worst trades?
Okay, so I'm going to focus on one trade. Again, Kyren for ETN, it's up there. But there's one far and away winner. It's so bad, it like makes me blush even to say this. But, okay, the worst was I gave up Amon-Ra St. Brown and a first for J.K. Dobbins. And, yeah, this is like epic levels of bad. Okay, and in my defense,
can you tell me when this happened? Was this like
I'm going to. Exactly. This was right before the trade deadline my first year, so 2021. It was my first league. I had legitimately no idea what normal value was for anyone or any pick. My logic was simply, Amon-Ra was a fourth round rookie on a 1-11 Lions team. He was probably just like Travis Fulgham 2.0, and I needed to like capitalize on that value while I could. And Dobbins, on the other hand, was coming off the ACL, and I was like, but he had an elite profile, so he was like an elite yet distressed asset who I could like flip into and gain. And that was going to be good for my rebuilding team to come back strong the following season. I made, literally, I counted 7 different process mistakes here that got me to this trade, and I could go through them with you. So one was, number one, I was just way too certain in my assessments. Obviously, I needed to be more open to the fact that this Amon-Ra thing was indicative of a player who's just undervalued in the draft and really had something to contribute at the NFL level. Number two was, I was just like, crap, there's a deadline. I want to do something. I can't do anything for the next however many years because this is my first and only league at that point, and I had no other league that had like no deadline, like a TA league or whatever. So, and I'm still learning that one, by the way, because I still get a little like pressured in my head and like have to do something, deadline coming up, must act. I think I weighed draft capital too heavily. I was like, Amon-Ra's a fourth, Dobbins was like a second, so they're really gonna do that. I also, making it even worse, just saying it's a first, that's one thing, but I didn't pay attention to the league rules. I thought I was trading away the 1.5 at that point. It turned out, with the way things landed, it was 1.3, and it wound up being Olave, and I was just like kicking myself double, though that's not such a big deal to Rocky, who hates Olave, which is fine. then I overrated the odds and speed of injury recovery. I was just like, oh yeah, ACL, no big deal. He'll be back next year, week one, like good as new. I also, I guess separately, or I guess you could say this is the same one, but I didn't pay attention to the other ligaments. I just like saw ACL and was like, great. But for Dobbins, it was actually like MCL and some other things too. And it was not that simple of a recovery, as we know. And the last thing was, this was the kicker of all of this, was I didn't sufficiently account for playoff luck. What happened was that first year I mentioned I got screwed on Ridley. And so my team was crap. I was trading away a bunch of pieces. I wound up lucking into some good matchups and I snuck into the sixth seed. But my logic was I'm an awful, awful team. Like I don't have the guns to compete with these teams. And I was like, I'm not going anywhere. But the top three in that league paid out. I got an easy matchup in round one, wound up in the third place game. And I lost the third place game to Amon-Ra St. Brown, who I had traded to him, and lost the cash out because of it. So this was a disaster I've never heard anything like in anyone's experience before. And I hope to never hear anything like this again because it was horrible and it haunts me to this day.
Yeah.
I will say trading for hurt J.K. Dobbins is not ideal. But I will say there was a lot of talk post his rookie season. Like I remember talking at the whole non-point scoring season, like, is this for real? Do you believe in Amon-Ra St. Brown? Is this just a mirage? Because it was only the second half of his rookie year, even, I think.
Yes, it was, producing. Yeah.
So
it was literally, I'll tell you, I looked this up as well. It was between week 14 and week 15, because week 15 started the playoffs and our trade deadline started when the playoffs started. So Amon-Ra had just had six games in a row where he had six catches, but he had only one game of like 100 yards. The next game, week 15, first round of the playoffs, he puts up 18 targets, 14 catches, 193 yards and a touchdown.
And yeah. And to your credit, by the way, if J.K. Dobbins had come back and had a Derrick Henry season, he would have been RB1 because Bijan wasn't there yet. So, I mean, because of age and what he just did. So that's fair. Well, that's going to be the end of our show, because that's the end of our show sheet. So, Dynastud, you successfully did your first TA podcast. Well done. Thanks for coming on. I know you're not content creator, but I want to remind everyone where they can find your stuff.
Oh, God. I have to remember my Twitter handle. Okay, so I'm at FTball, so Football Dynastud on Twitter. You can follow me there, or you can just look at literally any tweet where Frank asks for questions for the Trade Addicts podcast, and I will be there multiple times. So looking forward to interacting with y'all, and it's been a pleasure, fellas.
Yeah, do you know what's funny is when he didn't remember his Twitter, I know it's Football Dynastud, because I write it in the sheet every so I knew what your Twitter handle was. Our stuff, patreon.com/TradeAddictsPod. You can watch us while we record. You can see all of our pretty faces. You can see Dynastud's young face for 38 and good looking and all that stuff. We also have our Discord chat, the Cool Kids Club. Always fun in there. There was a lot of talk about preseason stuff and trades over the weekend. And then fantasycares.org/campaigns. They have their end of summer giveaway coming up. Like I think Scott said, like it's literally like one prize per two people at this point. Like it's kind of crazy how much stuff they got going. So, and then, you know, they'll always have some good stuff going on. And I think that's it. So as Russ Fisher always told us, if you have a trading problem, you're never alone. Good night, everybody.
Night, Frank.
Thank you for listening to the Trade Addict Podcast, a member of the DLF family of podcasts, and a proud member in the Dynasty Addict Podcast Network. Please follow your hosts at Dynasty Haha and at Dynasty FF Addict. Please subscribe, rate, and review. We will catch you next time on the Trade Addict Podcast. Poopy pants.
Daddy's the best.
See ya.